How We Survive, Adapting to Climate Change from Marketplace is supported by Impax Asset Management, focused on the investment risks and opportunities arising from the transition to a more sustainable global economy and helping clients invest in climate change solutions. ImpaxAM.com/invest.
I'm Molly Wood. You're listening to the Marketplace Tech Special, How We Survive, Adapting to Climate Change. The effects of climate change are more obvious every day. Record-breaking heat, extreme storms, devastating drought and wildfire, catastrophic flooding. And as the world reckons with how to slow the warming that's driving this changing weather, we're also figuring out how to adapt to it, how to survive it. Adaptation, also called resilience in the climate world, has been a relatively small part of the climate conversation. One study from a think tank called the Climate Policy Initiative estimates that we spent $30 billion on climate adaptation from 2017 to 2018. But experts say we should be spending a lot more, specifically $180 billion every year over the next decade on solutions like early warning systems for floods and storms, more resilient homes and buildings and infrastructure, managing water, creating more resilient crops. All of that, says the Global Commission on Adaptation, would result in more than $7 trillion in benefits. And that investment is starting. Much like the pandemic changed the way we live around the world, climate change is forcing us to change how we think about a new reality of extreme weather and changing landscapes. Over the next hour, we'll look at how people are adapting to wildfire, flooding, and drought, how companies are coming up with tech innovations to make people more resilient, how startups are reinventing finance and business models for a new world of climate, and how established companies and industries are changing faster than they ever imagined. Adaptation is, first and foremost, a mindset, and people are thinking differently. The people who can afford to are, in some cases, making major changes to their homes and their lives. They're buying generators and solar-powered batteries to keep the lights on when the power goes out. They're installing air conditioning in parts of the country that didn't used to get so hot. They're shopping for houses that are farther away from sea level rise, and they're trying to make their homes more resilient. Brian Rankin owns a place right on a creek on Maryland's eastern shore. It was built in the 60s and flooded during Hurricane Isabel in 2003. He bought the house in 2015, but could see evidence of the flood.
Where the plywood was stained, you know, is much, much darker.
Rankin renovated the home with surviving future floods in mind. The problem, he says, isn't just water coming in. It's what happens when the water tries to leave and gets stuck.
If there's water trapped in the house with the foundation, that's when you can have problems. So we installed smart vents that as the water recedes, they open up and let the water out of the house.
The vents weren't cheap. They cost over $1,000 altogether. Rankin also installed chemical insulation in the house because the pink fluffy stuff would be ruined if there was a flood.
The electrical is installed 3 feet above the ground floor. I mean, switches are normally that high anyway, but on the ground floor, all the electrical outlets are above that. So in case it flooded, it wouldn't short out.
He thought about even more radical adaptations, like a 4-foot wall around the property to keep the water out completely.
My wife thinks it's a good idea. I haven't thought about it because it'd be like an astronomical expense. But I mean, you think about it.
And when the hurricanes do come, the Rankins just move stuff. This summer, when they thought Hurricane Isaias might hit the home, they moved all the mattresses, pillows, and papers to higher floors.
And then you get tired, and it's like, oh, I should move that too, but I'm too tired. I've been doing this all day. This thing I can let go.
Brian Rankin in Kent County, Maryland. Now, some adaptations are pretty practical, like the Rankins. You don't think about how you're adapting to climate change. You're just getting necessities for a new normal. For some, though, as reality sinks in, like extended fire seasons and smoky air in the American West, it's just too much to take. Keith Helfrich lives in San Francisco, California. Like the Rankins, he started out with small adaptations around the house. He bought an air filtration system and a water distillation machine to improve the quality of the water he uses. But after California's worst wildfire season ever, Helfrich has had enough.
The fires were sort of a last straw for me. I've been one of those people saving and saving and saving, aspire to purchase a house in the Bay Area. And the climate migration research that I did just showed that millions of people from the southwestern United States are going to be forced to move north to Colorado and west to California. And we already see that the society around us is filled with people with guns and conflict. And so I just decided I'm going to move to Switzerland. I'm a climate migrant. I'm moving to Switzerland because it's up in the hills, right? I'm running for the hills somewhat. It's up in the Alps, insulated both from cultural and societal conflict, and it's centrally located to Western Europe. I don't want to be doing this, and I lament the feeling of necessity. And so even though I'm doing this because it's best for me, it's not that I'm doing it because I want to.
Keith Helfrich is managing director of a data consultancy company. He currently lives in San Francisco. Studies have found that Helfrich is on the bleeding edge of something that will become more common over time. A 2018 study said 1 in 12 Americans in the southern half of the country would move west and northwest over the next 45 years solely because of climate change. The ones who can afford to move, of course, and that will profoundly increase inequalities between those who leave and those who must stay in increasingly hostile areas. If Helfrich, though, is an early adopter of climate migration, Devine Lulenbega and Rekha Bellum are in some ways living as though the worst is already here. The two are partners, originally from Montreal. They also work together developing games as a team called 100 Rabbits. A few years ago, they decided they wanted to live as sustainably as possible, using as little energy as they could. So they bought a sailboat, solar panels, and a few batteries. They moved on to the boat, and they document how they live to inspire others to become more resilient. Here's Devine Lulenbega.
Our boat is a Yamaha 33-foot. The boat is older than us. Well, when we got the boat, we didn't know anything about boats. We didn't know anything about carpentry or fixing engines or anything like that, so we wanted a boat that was already working. The reason why we do everything that we do, I would probably say resilience, because to have systems that don't completely break apart is super important. We have a whole bunch of friends which we hope that they would be more resilient, but it's not like, hey, you should totally go live on a sailboat and sail around the Pacific Ocean. Like, it's not replicable, it doesn't scale. My take on this is like, the only thing that people will listen to is the law of thermodynamics. Like, when their house is on fire, then they'll be like, huh, how can I improve my system? It's really hard to sell that people are going to gain things by trying to live closer to nature. You have to be so frustrated.
The 100 Rabbits almost immediately had to adapt. When they set sail, they were designing games for iOS and realized that takes a hefty internet connection.
By the time we got to French Polynesia, we would buy like 5 gig internet cards, but then the update is 10 gigs and it has to be downloaded uninterrupted. So we would like put the SIM card in our phone, put it in a plastic bag, raise it on the mast, and then I would just try to download the update, monitor it as it downloads slowly. And as soon as the card expires, like pull the phone down, change the card, put it up again and hope it doesn't crash. If it crashes, I have to start over again. But this whole thing was just ridiculous. The breaking point is when I met another developer that was also doing that. And then we kind of like, we talked a bit and we're like, this is stupid. Like, I mean, we have to like change the way we work.
So how to build less power intensive software that doesn't need constant internet access and doesn't drain the tiny solar batteries they had on board? The Rabbits started writing games in Assembly, the programming language used in the 1980s to create games for Nintendo's classic NES. Those games also run on modern systems.
It seemed like a daunting task at first because it's not really well documented, but it's actually so simple. It's so beautiful. It's elegant. And there are so few parts to learn that the way I look at it sometimes, it's just like operating like a power tool.
Lynn Vega knows that not everyone is going to move onto a boat to use fewer resources. And not everyone is going to start coding in a language from the 80s to make games that are less power-hungry and easier to upload or download. But still, the pair wants to build some sort of a model that others could emulate if they wanted to or had to.
We're not trying to scare people. We're just trying to explore. We have the opportunity of trying some things in an environment that feels like something closer to what, you know, post-apocalyptic life would be. But while these things are directly affecting our life, I think it has some values for the people who are affected by, you know, California fires and or people who are in a city where the grid often goes down. We see some value in trying to inspire others to try it at least.
Daveen Lulin-Vega. He's part of the software team 100 Rabbits, developing video games on a sailboat out on the Pacific Ocean. Now, adaptation on the scale of the entire planet is more than a person or a couple people or one house or one sailboat at a time. It'll take a mindset shift at the scale of companies, businesses, even global finance. Luckily, that reality is also starting to take hold.
How We Survive, Adapting to Climate Change from Marketplace is supported by Impax Asset Management, strategies for investors who want to be part of the solution to global challenges, including climate change. More at impaxam.com/invest.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.